I've started seeing burnout as actually a sign of when our bodies are telling us it's time to evolve. You know, there's something about what you're doing in your day-to-day right now that is draining you and burning you out. So what does that mean for your next chapter?
Welcome back to another episode of Success in Mind. Today, I'm joined by Lindsay Epperly, the CEO of Jet Set World Travel, which she has scaled from a one-person operation into a team of over 70 dedicated members, recently recognized on the Inc. 5000 list of fastest-growing companies. Inspired by navigating her industry's greatest crisis while expecting her first child, a season she affectionately refers to as the MBA I never wanted, Lindsay is dedicated to leveraging the illusion of control and teaching others how to turn obstacles into opportunities. On a personal note, I just have to say that I had so much fun recording this episode with Lindsay. She was a joy to talk to. She shares all about how her and her husband faced difficult decisions in their business and had to prioritize the business over their home. She talks about the experience of working with her husband and how they navigate balancing work and personal life. She emphasizes practical tips for scaling your business and how to manage, recognize, and also avoid burnout. This conversation covers everything: resiliency, imposter syndrome. And for all of you entrepreneurs out there who are in a service-based business and you're looking to scale and how to do it successfully, Lindsay is someone you definitely need to follow and listen to. This episode is packed with incredible advice for entrepreneurs of all levels of business. You're listening to Success in Mind, the show for high-performing leaders, changemakers, and entrepreneurs ready to take your life and business to the next level. If you're ready for whole life success, keep listening. Have you ever dreamed of launching your own podcast, but you don't know where to start? Well, I have created the must-have podcast launch strategy checklist. It's free for you in the show notes. It'll take you from your show's concept all the way through to launching and promoting your show. So why wait? Don't let the uncertainty of not knowing what to do hold you back any longer. Grab your free podcast launch strategy checklist today. It's time to turn your passion into a powerful podcast that the world can't wait to hear. Hi, Lindsay. Welcome to the show.
Hey, Terry. Thanks for having me.
I've been looking forward to this because I have to say I've been binging all of your podcast content and I love your show. So I'm excited to have this conversation.
That means a lot. You know, I kind of started podcasting as a means to an end and I have fallen in love with it. And it's really fun.
It is fun. It's a lot of fun. So I want to jump into your story because you went from almost losing your home to making the Inc. 5000 list in under 3 years, which is incredible. So let's start there and tell us, how did you do that? And what was that journey like for you?
Thanks. We are just jumping right into it.
Right in.
So yeah, it actually was. So my husband and I are in business together, which we knew going into it, we're going to be putting all eggs in one basket. But when we made that decision, everything was up and to the right. So of course, it was an easy one to start working together. And I own a travel agency. I had founded this travel agency. He was coming in to help me scale it. We're working on it for about a year together. And granted, the business had been around for about six at that point. We were working on it together and expecting our first child. We had a home under contract. Everything is, you know, moving forward. And then at 5 months pregnant was March of 2020. As you can imagine, of course, everyone went through their individual journeys during this time. The travel industry was very, very heavily hit. You know, obviously with planes grounded, we didn't have many places to send people to and no one was willing to travel for the longest time. So that put us in a place of, wow, he quit his job in finance, right? I've built this business over the past however many years. And we really believe in it. We really believe that there is something here and that we can weather this storm. But in order to weather that storm, we really had to make some tough decisions, one of which was, do we keep our business or do we keep our home? And the decision was, we keep the business. So we said, we know this will come out better on the other side. We just don't know when the other side will be. So that journey was, you know, kind of like an 18 to 24 month journey where we are having to move back to my hometown to have our first little girl and deciding, what does life look like right now that our business cannot actually even generate an income, but we have made the decision to keep our employees, to keep our lights on, and to actually set a mission. So we learned so much about leading through adversity during this time. And that, honestly, Terry, was the coolest thing. It led us to so many amazing opportunities. one of which was an acquisition. And so we wound up acquiring a larger company. Jet Set World Travel is the name of the company, which we've since rebranded to, which was a company I had long since admired. I had always loved what their founder did. We had a lot in common. The team was just a beautiful team that really resembled ours when it came to their kindness and the way they served their clients. And so we had this opportunity and we moved on it. So that further delayed having a home because we're now buying a business.
Right.
But it was the right move. It really gave us the momentum that we needed to continue growing. And through this crisis, through this kind of like 2.5-3 year period, we actually managed to quadruple in growth. And And last year, I made the Inc. 5000 list. So that's our story from losing the home to the Inc. 5000 list in under 3 years.
That's amazing.
Thank you.
It's such an incredible story of going through a challenging time. And it sounds like to me that it was, you know, that you had faith that it would work out. And that's what kind of pulled you through it. And I actually just talked about that on my last episode. So it ties in quite nicely. But having that faith to that everything is going to be okay, that you will get through it. And that's what an incredible journey.
You know, it was really amazing. And I'm a very spiritual person. And I love the idea that when we're in those trials, that actually what is happening is not happening to us, but it's happening for us.
Yeah.
And as difficult as that kind of like 2 year span was, where we just feel like we're wandering through the desert, I felt such a clarity. And again, my husband being my business partner was also there. He's a very stable figure, thank God, because I'm a very emotional figure. But I continued, like, we just felt this clarity of like, okay, this is your story. And what story do you want to tell? Do you want to tell the story? Mm. Well, we tried it and it didn't work out. So he went back to his job in finance. Now I'm a stay-at-home mom. Or do you want to tell the story? Right. We stuck it through. We saw the vision. We poured back into our team and our people, and it paid off on the other side. And that's the story we're so thankful to tell now.
Amazing. Amazing. And I have to ask, what is it like working with your husband? Because I couldn't do it. So whenever I see couples working together, I'm like, how do you do that? Because I could have a business or a marriage, but I could not combine them.
You know, we get that a lot. You are not the only person who has expressed the same sentiment. We decided, so he actually quit his job in finance the week that we got married. We decided, while we are young and dumb and don't know any better, let's move forward with this whole idea that we can craft a life of freedom and flexibility by pursuing entrepreneurship together. So I had actually founded the company. I had been working in travel. I've now been working in travel for about 15 years, but I was previously a frontline travel advisor. And I would just kind of, I was growing my book of business. And then I decided to mentor additional people. And then I decided, well, maybe I could actually scale this thing even larger. So I was well on my way to scaling. But as your audience probably knows, as fellow entrepreneurs, especially when you're kind of that right-brained visionary individual, man, do you need an integrator? Do you need someone who is the left brain that can come in with systems and processes and all the things that kind of like kill the creativity because you just can't imagine existing in that world? But you need that. And so I needed that. And I was just fortunate enough that I was getting married to a man who possessed that particular set of skills.
Perfect. Oh, that sounds great. I know.
Yeah.
Like I'm listening to you talk about that. And I'm like, no, my husband doesn't have those skills either. Like we would be screwed.
You know, you'd think because you possess like two very different skill sets and very obviously different roles and mindsets that it would be very easy just to come and work side by side. But I think the thing, Terry, that's so fascinating about working with your spouse is that you and your spouse are different people at work than you are at home. And you don't really come to realize that until you're side by side in that environment.
I bet. That makes so much sense. That'd be interesting. Yeah. Because my husband's an RCMP officer. He's a cop. And I've heard him sometimes on work calls and he's like his voice is different.
Yes.
Like he's a totally different person. And that was an eye opener for me during the pandemic and during lockdowns. He was working from home and I would catch like little sound bites of his conversations. And I'm like, who is this person in my house? Like who is
That's the man who gets the job done in his role, but it looks very different than what his role is at home. And I wish someone would have told us that up front, you know, because all of a sudden we're starting to butt up against this tension of, well, home Lindsay and home Jeremy are very happily in love, but work Lindsay and work Jeremy do not love each other quite as much. So it was learning essentially the professional respect of, well, I am a different person at work because I have to get it done because that's what's actually moved the needle for this long, right? So you have to learn to appreciate that about one another. And that doesn't come naturally, I don't think. I think you really have to be intentional.
I bet. Do you ever find it challenging to switch from being, you know, at work partners to at home.
Yes.
Especially now that we have two kids. We have two little daughters, a one-year-old and an almost four-year-old. And yes, I mean, it's, you have to really think it through about, are we going to have work conversations at the dinner table? Mm-hmm. Let's not do that, right? Let's use that time intentionally to be mom and dad, because that is an irreplaceable role for each of us. Yeah. And they need us to be mom and dad at that point. Now, during our day-to-day, especially because we work from home and we are very intentional, we do not even work on the same floor. We have a floor between us, so that's helpful.
Nice.
But you still, as you're passing through and see each other at lunch, like, is this going to be a professional conversation or is this going to be a husband and wife conversation? And sometimes we actually will verbally articulate that to each other. Like, hey, I need you to be my husband right now, not my partner.
That's good. It sounds like you have really good and clear boundaries there.
They've come with time.
Yeah. Yeah, I bet. So it takes learning and practice for sure. Yes. Yeah, you talk often about the illusion of control. Mm-hmm. And I would love for you to tell us more about that and how you know, how that affected you or your learnings around that. And share that.
Yeah, thanks for asking that. I like this topic a lot because it's one of those things that I think when you are in a season of life where everything is going well, like success can cover up a lot of your own mindset flaws, right? Or your behavioral patterns that might be actually working against you. And for me, one of those behavioral patterns was oftentimes I would cling so tightly to control on the business. And I was always the bottleneck. And so we were actually growing slower than I wanted. And I remember a mentor telling me prior to our kind of 24-month journey where just everything fell apart, I remember a mentor telling me that the tighter you cling, the slower you'll grow. And so at the time I thought, okay, well, I'll loosen up a little bit, right? Like I'll just loosen it up just here. But it's only incremental when you are doing it in that way. For me, it took the absolute leveling of the business. And then we had a subsequent health journey. We had a subsequent losing a family member. Like we had all of these things happen one after one after one that just loosened my grip whether I wanted to or not. And that's the time that the business took off, right? Because I started actually delegating and actually trusting my team. And we built out a really beautiful leadership team to kind of staff ahead of the growth that we realized we would have so that we would be prepared as we continued to gain momentum and we could serve our clients and our advisors well. And so being able to actually learn to lead instead of clinging continuously has been a really wonderful lesson that I will always keep learning, right? I don't think I'll ever be on the other side of that lesson, but it has been my continuous life theme.
Yeah. Can you tell us a little bit more about what that transition was like for you from going from, you know, being the, you know, having that sort of sense of control to stepping into that leadership role? What was that like? And what were some of the lessons that you learned through there about leadership and leading a team of people?
It's a really good question. I think about the times that I have stepped most clearly into a leadership role. Once when I was first forming a team and mentoring individuals, and I started seeing myself as a leader in that moment of, oh, I get to steward other individuals in their career journeys and also pour into them personally. And then again, when I took on the CEO role at JetSet, when I said intentionally, I'm going to move out of client-facing work so that I can actually help lead this company from a heart-centered place that is not distracted by everything else. Both of those times were a direct result of burnout. And so it's really interesting because I've started seeing burnout not just as a symptom of overwork or, you know, like what we're doing to ourselves to kind of like be tired at the job because we're exhausted from doing it for so long.
Yeah.
I've started seeing burnout as actually a sign when our bodies are telling us it's time to evolve. You know, there's something about what you're doing in your day-to-day right now that is draining you and burning you out. So what does that mean for your next chapter? And to actually listen to that and step into that, that is what has allowed me to really up-level as a leader during the times that I feel like my company and myself needed it the most.
Interesting. I love that. And I love that you differentiate between it being a symptom and being a sign of something. Because I think so often we look at it as it's a symptom that something is, you know, that we're broken or something's wrong with us. Or we look at it as, you know, I need to get out of this business or change everything. But seeing it as a sign, I think, is much more empowering to allow us to move through that and to evolve, like you said, into another chapter.
Yeah, it's been a very hard learning lesson, of course, but a very helpful one.
And then I think there's an element too, especially when we're first growing, and I have a service-based business and I was the main practitioner for the longest time, right? So I had to very much grow from solopreneur wearing all the hats to now entrepreneur. What am I best at? And how do I surround myself with a team of individuals who are doing what they're best at? And when you're giving over those responsibilities, especially the ones that you're like really good at, but you don't have to be doing, that other people can do well, those are the hardest ones because you think, but I could do them the best. And that is not true. I mean, I see a team that I work with now, both from my advisor side and our leadership team. And I'm like, I am so glad they're doing what they're doing because they do it way better than I ever did. But that trust in the initial stages, you really have to realize like you're not looking for someone to replace you and every single thing that you do right. You're looking for someone that can bring their own unique abilities to the table. And one way that's helped me a lot, just kind of a practical tip, because I would bottleneck things so much, I used to look at every single how, right? How I would give them a what, like, here's your assignment. Here's what I want done. But then I would watch their how, just like, through a magnifying glass, meaning, well, are they taking this step that I would take next? Or are they taking this step that I would take next? Like, how are they going to get it done? And then I would micromanage the how. So what really wound up changing for me was when I simply focused on the what. Okay, here's the project that I need done. Here's the end result that I need to see achieved. I don't even want to look at it between now and then. Like, you figure out the how, because that's what you are intrinsically good at. And then we're able to meet back up on the whatever that assignment was is now done. And it's probably done a lot better than I would have done it because I'm not trying to figure out the how along the way.
Right. Right. Oh, that's so good. What would you say to listeners right now who are in those service-based roles, they're a solopreneur, and they'd like to scale their business? Where do you start?
For me, have you ever done a delegation quadrant?
No.
Okay, so I came across this. I think a mentor first showed it to me. And then I think if you follow any of Michael Hyatt's work, I think he actually had one that had to do with client work as well. It's really good.
Okay.
But essentially, where I would start is thinking through this delegation quadrant. So this idea of, you know, you're looking at a four. I know we're videoing, but most people are probably listening. So like, I've got my hands across and I'm making a quadrant. So imagine like upper corner, you've got like the things that you are best at and the things that no one else can do. And then you've got the things that you are best at, but the things that other people can do. And then in the bottom, you have the things that you don't like, but other people can do them. And then you have the things that you don't like, but only you can do them. Okay. So now you've got, and I probably just laid that out all wrong. So I apologize, listener, that you're probably more confused than to begin with. Maybe I'll draw this and we can like put it as supplemental material with my like on the back of a napkin drawing or something.
Nice.
But essentially what you are looking for is, what am I best at that I can be doing that brings me to life? Also, what am I really good at that I cannot delegate to anyone else? And then all this other stuff that is delegatable, even if it's something you're great at, if someone else can be doing it, give them that, right? Like, you're just constantly moving toward what is your unique strength and gifting. And so when you're going from that solopreneur to entrepreneur journey, it's just starting there and figuring out, well, all right, I'll use travel advisors, for example, right? I mentor travel advisors every single day and help them grow their businesses because many of them are independent contractors. And so we're looking at, well, when a travel advisor gets to capacity, when they have so many wonderful clients loving what they're doing, that they're getting tons of referrals, and now it is time to grow, what do they do? Because there's usually a plateau that happens around the same point in sales for everyone. Well, it's typically hire an assistant. Well, what do I have the assistant do? Well, what do you best at? And what could that assistant be doing that like maybe you can give up? So it's just taking those tiny incremental steps. You're not going to figure it all out in the first go. It's going back to that delegation quadrant time and time again. Each time you start feeling the tension of, ooh, I'm maybe at capacity. So how do I best scale this from there?
Great. I want to go back and talk more about burnout too. Mm-hmm. I was thinking about that as you were talking about this, being like, those are really when we're not recognizing, I mean, at least in my opinion, when we're not recognizing those signs when it's time to start delegating, like that's, to me, that's the path to burnout. That's where it first begins. So
yeah,
are there other signs when you're heading into burnout that you've recognized? And what are some of the ways that you now avoid going into burnout and ways that you maybe do things differently to prevent that?
Yeah, that's a really good question. I started really linking resiliency and a lack of resiliency to seasons of burnout. So you can start kind of feeling yourself like if you're able to bounce back from a setback, like that's, you're probably not burned out yet. But if there's a setback, even a small setback, and you're just like, you can't imagine going on, probably a pretty big sign that there's a tension there that needs to be addressed.
Right.
I'll give you an example. For the longest time, I growing up in business, my dad was in business for himself, and I had a number of male mentors who were just wonderful human, but male mentors. And so they would tackle anytime I had kind of like a setback that would make me sad and feel it in my little emotional self, right? I'm even using small words like little emotional self, which is wrong. We should not do that to ourselves.
Right.
But I would feel this in an emotional place. And their response, this was unanimous response across all of my male mentors board, would be, you just need thicker skin. You just got to get thicker skin, right? Like I could just like go purchase it at an office supply store. So for the longest, I would try to put myself into the front of that oncoming train, right? Like the only way to get thicker skin is to callus. It's to actually repetition, build up that muscle. And so I thought that was the way that I needed to do things. And then suddenly I would wake up and I would realize, like, the example maybe here is client work. Like I loved for a decade working with clients. And then it just started feeling like there's a tension here. And it's because my body and my role were ready to grow, to lead and to do something different. But because I tried to just keep putting myself in front of that train, right? Every time it was hitting, I suddenly felt like a human punching bag. I suddenly felt my skin getting thinner instead of getting thicker. And instead of listening to that, I lived in a state of burnout for probably a couple of years, really.
Oh, wow.
Where it was like, but I love clients. You're like, I love doing this. And so this is again where I go back to, I loved it. I was good at it, but other people could do it. But could other people lead this company and scale it the way that I'm going to as the founder? Probably not. And eventually we'll get to a point where the answer to that is yes, other people probably could do it better than the founder because the founder has all sorts of, you know, little ties to it. But for the season that it needed me, there was no one that could replace that role, but there were incredible advisors, ones that I was already mentoring, that could work with the client and at that point do it much better than me because they were not facing that season of burnout that told them it's time to move on to what's next. So that's my example there. And what's been so cool is now I lead a team of 80 advisors and
amazing
to see them work with clients and the ideas they come up with and the solutions they come up with. I mean, I just like sit back and watch a lot of times because I'm like, oh, I would have never thought of that. Like they're just so good because they're living in their passion and their unique gifting, at least for that season.
Oh, that's incredible. You know, I've also heard you talk about imposter syndrome and monsters. And I love listening to this on your podcast because I'm like, oh, I love this idea of monsters. And can you tell us about that too and how you deal with imposter syndrome in your business?
Yeah, I love both of those topics. I feel like we need to like camp out on each. So I'll start with the idea of imposter syndrome. This started for me. So I became a travel advisor at 19 years old. I had wandered into a travel agency for a brochure and I accidentally walked out with a job. It was a total fluke.
Amazing.
So I'm 19 years old. I've never seen anything besides like a Best Western. All right. And I get a job as a luxury travel advisor. And I'm like, what does this even mean? You know, what am I doing? And I remember like my first, they're called familiarization trips, which is essentially where you as an advisor get to go to the destination, tour a bunch of hotels and say like, okay, I have a client who would work well here. I have a client who would work. So I had been by that point that I got invited on that trip, building a book of business of individuals who were willing to stay in nicer places than a Best Western. Nothing wrong with Best Western, but my job was now to sell luxury.
Yeah.
And I did not know a thing about luxury, right? I did not come from that background. I did not know the etiquette. What fork do I use at dinner? I still don't really know. But I remember going on my first fam trip, which was to Tahiti. All right. So like I'm going to fly into Tahiti and then go to Bora Bora and Moorea. These are places that I have only ever dreamed of. Some of the most luxurious accommodations on earth. And I'm like sitting in the lobby of the Intercontinental in Bora Bora and just waiting to be tapped on the shoulder and like, excuse me, ma'am, you actually don't belong here, right? So imposter syndrome for me started with the actual job description. It was a matter of I'm here learning, but wow, do I not belong in these walls? And that was an early kind of gremlin that I had to address in my head of, nope, actually, you are here on behalf of your clients and you do belong in these walls because you're learning and you're growing and you're helping and you're serving on the other end of that. So there was just a constant battle of belonging almost, I think is where the imposter syndrome first comes from. And then I felt that echoed very frequently as I stepped into leadership roles, right? Like the minute you step into that, this is why I started a whole podcast called Who Made You the Boss?
Because, great name, by the way.
Thank you. I feel like I ask myself that question all the time, right? I'm like, oh my God, if people knew that I put my shirt on backwards this morning, like, would they actually listen to me to lead? So, which side note, I did for my child, unfortunately. this very morning. But, you know, like, so I wanted to talk more frequently, more openly with people about like who we really are. And let's stop trying to put on facades and pretend like we've all done it before. Like I wake up every morning and get to lead a company that's a little bit larger than it was the day before. So yeah. No, I haven't done it before and I'm figuring it out. And my team works in such a beautiful way of giving grace and giving feedback. And we have an open line of communication. And I wanted to amplify that outward to show kind of like what we built at JetSet in an outward way so that other people could learn about what we talk about with imposter syndrome and that it's real and everyone has it. It's okay.
Yeah.
You just got to move forward with it.
Absolutely. You know, I always look at imposter syndrome as being a good sign of growth. Mm. And also, you know, I don't know if you're familiar with the Dunning-Kruger effect, but it's the idea that people with a lot of knowledge on a subject are the ones who doubt themselves because they know so much that they know they don't know everything and that they'll never know everything on their subject.
Yeah.
And so I like to look at it as it's a really good sign that you know a lot more than you're giving yourself credit for.
I love that. Yeah. I haven't come across that so far. That's a really good
point.
Well,
there you go. Yeah. Excellent. Tell us more about your podcast.
Okay. So the podcast exists to help recovering workaholics. So I found myself in that state time and time again. And again, just wishing more people would talk openly about the challenges toward high achievers, right? Like we talk to a lot of entrepreneurs, but we're also talking to creatives and to executives and to individuals who just have that drive. And with that drive comes imposter syndrome and comes burnout and comes an anxiousness, whether you actually are dealing with anxiety like I myself have dealt with, or if it's just simply that kind of like low level hum of anxiousness. Because you feel like that's what's encouraging you to succeed. So I really like talking to guests about whether or not we even believe can ambition exist without anxiety. And everyone has a different thought on that. I personally feel now like it can, but I didn't feel like that when I was first building out my career and finding success. So a lot of this is redefining what does success actually mean to each of us.
I love that. How would people find your podcast? What's the best place to go and the best place to connect with you?
Yeah, thanks for asking. The podcast is called Who Made You the Boss, and it is available anywhere you listen to or watch podcasts. To connect with me, and I love connecting with people. So I am on Instagram most frequently at Lindsay Epperly, but you can also find me on LinkedIn. Those are kind of my two most frequently used platforms. But I love connecting.
Great. I'm going to link all of those in the show notes. So it'll be very easy to find you. What are you excited about in your business that's coming up for you? What are you looking forward to?
So, you know, I mentioned kind of our goal of amplification, and that's why we actually started a podcast. Like most people would think, well, wouldn't you start a podcast about the travel industry since you're in the travel industry? And it does exist. You know, I wanted to actually start something that showed the heart and the culture that we've created at JetSet, where we actually pour into advisors from more than just a professional standpoint, from a holistic look. And then I just realized this is fun to talk about outside of the industry as well. I want others to know that travel advisors exist. It's a really value additive service to work with. And it's also a really value added job if you are pursuing it. And it can be really special. So the goal, and that excites me, is that it's amplification. This is also our 10th anniversary in business this year. So we have a big summit planned for our team and for our partners this fall. And that's just, I mean, you know, to make it to that point, to be a female founder that started in her 20s, like I started at 25 when I launched my business, and to have made it 10 years, I mean, that is, I have to kind of sit back and pinch myself, right? Like that is beyond all the statistics, which is really exciting. And I want to make sure I'm present and I'm proud and not just moving through to what's next, that I actually appreciate this year for what it is, which is a milestone.
Yeah. Congratulations.
Thank you.
That is a milestone. That's incredible.
Thanks.
Okay. So now I'm going to go into our rapid fire questions. Favorite book?
Favorite book of all time that I reference all the time is Untamed by Glennon Doyle.
Oh, excellent book.
Yeah.
So good.
Changed the way I mother, changed the way I lead the company. Like it was such a beautiful piece on feminism and how we can step into our power as women.
Absolutely. Favorite food?
Favorite food is noodles of any sort, but especially Thai dishes.
Oh, me too.
Are you?
Me too.
You know,
I
will eat. This is so weird. Maybe it's not weird, but like in my travels, there are certain destinations that will actually serve noodles as breakfast. And I am happiest in the destinations that will give me noodles for breakfast.
Oh, I need to go there. I can eat them
breakfast, lunch, and dinner, literally.
Amazing. Yeah, I'm a big pad thai girl. There's a place locally that does a vegan pad thai. I'm not even vegan, but their vegan pad thai is so good that at least once a week I order it.
Like, yes.
At least, yes.
Noodles of any kind.
I support that. I'm on board. Biggest pet peeve.
So I am very bothered by sounds, like extraneous sounds, which is a difficult pet peeve to mitigate, especially as a traveler, right? Like, there's so much outside of our control when we're at an airport or on an airplane and all the little like pen clickings and conversations going on. Yeah. And I've just learned to travel with earplugs.
Smart. Smart. Who inspires you?
Brené Brown. Yeah. I love everything she puts into the world.
Agreed. Three things you would take with you to a deserted island.
You know, I have been to islands, but not deserted. So I think to the idea, right? I think I would have to bring an e-reader of some sort. Like, I'm a big reader. And if I'm going to make the most of being stranded, I think I'm going to be learning as well. I cannot forget my sunscreen because I have fair skin and that this would just be a disaster if I'm stuck, right?
Very smart. And
can I take a person? Can I take my husband?
Sure. Yeah.
I'm taking him. Yeah.
Nice.
We have a lot of fun. And honestly, being in a place where you're remote and cut off, and I know that's not the essence of the question. I know that the essence of the question is you're stranded, but okay. I think we could just, you know, make the most of this. Those are the times that we're able to like step back and start dreaming big. So we could start dreaming about what we're going to do once we're off this deserted island.
I love it. I love that. A celebrity that you would like to have dinner with, dead or alive?
Okay, I think I'm going to go back to my first answer of Glennon Doyle, right? Like the writer of Untamed. Yeah. This is someone that I love everything she puts into the world. I follow her podcast. I read the book once a year, and I just feel like I would love to just have a meal with her.
That'd be amazing. I agree. And go-to karaoke song.
Okay, so this is so fun. It is Total Eclipse of the Heart by Bonnie Tyler.
That's mine.
No way.
Yes.
Okay. Wait, Terry, I have to tell you why I said this is so fun. So I was in Miami last week for kind of work, kind of play. And after a very long dinner with some of our friends, we get into an Uber and the Uber driver turns around with a microphone in his hand. And he goes, "Do you guys like karaoke?" And we had gotten into an Uber that had a full karaoke system installed. And I was like, "Fine, Total Eclipse of the Heart." So it was such a great moment. I hope the videos never make it to social media. But if every Uber driver, if any Uber drivers are listening, if you stock your car with karaoke, an instant 5-star rating. That was a fantastic
Absolutely.
Uber ride.
And I hope those videos do make it to social media because
I'll send
it
to you
it.
If they do.
Yes, please. Please do.
It has to be tough for the driver, right? Like after a certain number of karaoke car rides, he's got to maybe turn that off. That's good. As someone who has problems with sounds, that would maybe be too much.
Yeah, absolutely. I feel like he needs a show. Like
there's
some show I keep seeing online. I don't watch it, but I keep seeing it. It's like car trivia or something. I don't know. People are in a cab and
cab trivia show.
Yeah.
Cash cab.
That's it.
Yeah. That's been around.
I feel like this Uber driver needs to have like karaoke cab.
Karaoke. If he hasn't already thought of that, I'm sure that exists.
Brilliant.
Brilliant.
Fun. Yeah. Any final thoughts that you want to leave our audience with before we close up?
Gosh, no. I mean, I think that you've covered so much, right? Like you've covered the whole gamut of all the things that I enjoy talking about on my podcast, which is that idea of burnout and the idea of imposter syndrome. And when it comes right down to it, the control and perfectionism that we all kind of fall into. Mm-hmm. So I would just say if you are a listener and you're hearing these things and any of these sit with you where you feel like, that hit in a place where I know I need to work on it, like, work on it. Start doing it today. And it helps so much. Like your show is all about mindset. And so I think the best next step is the doing the one right thing that moves you forward toward getting in a better mindset. And we've all been there when that's deterring from our ultimate goal. So yeah, just need to encourage people to pursue what they feel like they need.
Perfect. I love that. Well, thank you so much for coming on today.
Thanks, dear.
It's so much fun.
Me too. It was lovely. Good.
Thanks for joining us today. Make sure that you check out Lindsay's podcast, Who Made You the Boss, and hit the subscribe button on it. You will not regret that. If you enjoyed this episode today, as always, leave your 5-star review on whatever platform you're listening on and share it with a friend who you think would benefit from this episode. I hope you have an amazing day. Bye for now.